you're here today to, I suppose, celebrate like a 100,000 installations of Jenkins.
Woo! Publicly visible.
Publicly visible. Yeah. So we probably have. Yeah, actually, we don't know how many instances that's out there. We really have no clue.
I guess it's probably at least 50% more than that, just based on random statistics and anecdotal data that I've heard. But anyway.
Right. So we have in the room, we have the Andrew Bayer.
Hi.
Chris Soar.
Hello.
And
what's his
Tyler.
Name? You know me.
Tyler.
Tyler, and then me, and I'm Kosuke, and Dean, you.
Hey.
Tyler's changed his name since we all started with this.
I have.
I almost mentioned you with the old name because I saw it on the blog reference. Anyway.
I started this project with a different name, and so did we.
I like the sign by.
So our final person here is named Kosuke. Not Kosuke.
Or people call me KK now. So they solve the problem in different ways.
Or Oscar. Let's not forget Oscar.
Yeah, so as a preparation, I guess I did that. I went down the memory lane a little bit and then tried to come up with the rough timeline of the events. I think all of us in the room has been around with the project for, I think, quite some time now. So I thought we might find some interesting behind the scenes story. At least we can collectively try to remember what it was like. So that's here. So it turns out that the first commit, and this really was the first commit because I went back to the Subversion repo, the commit number one, that's from 2004. That was done in CVS. So this one particular commit was converted from CVS to Subversion and then to Git. So it's been surviving for quite some time now. And then, so I've been originally using it internally for. And then it took some time before I made, even though the project itself was actually open source, it took some time before I made any public noise. And that was the first one went into Java.NET. So
and that's back in 2005.
Yeah, this is back in 2005. And then the good thing about it, all the pictures.
More than 10 years ago.
Just over.
Yeah,
February 7th, 2005.
Just over 10 years ago. So I was younger. So I don't actually remember why I decided to use this timing to blog about this. I don't know. So it's done like that. And then I'm also a bit surprised looking at the history that much of the stuff actually happened very early on. So a distributed build support came in 2006 Q1. I remember this because I mostly worked on this on the Christmas break. I think they're relying on NFS so that the two machines would have the exact same file system layout. I was forking the process over the another. So my slave was really just SSH them before the new process.
Was that when the Java-based slave stuff was introduced, or is it just SSH kind of stuff?
Well, later it gets completely redone. So this was like an early attempt because I only had one machine to run it. At this point, I got like a 6 projects running on single Sparkbox, and the computer was taking forever. So people were complaining. I felt the risk.
People were complaining about builds taking too long?
Yeah.
That's such a thing in the past.
It's never happened before.
After 2 years, I first have this another contributor, Jesse Glick, who actually now works with me. And it's very telling that the first commit...
Was he at Sun?
Yeah, he was at Sun by this point, although
yeah,
I didn't know
him. NetBeans team, right?
Yeah, he was with NetBeans. So the very first commit he makes is add the project file for NetBeans, of course. Of course, it has to be like that. And then the more of the stuff that makes Jenkins came in around this time in 2006 Q3.
Plugins.
I first introduced the plugin mechanism. I think this is because I finally started seeing another guy to contribute, so I wanted to. I actually need to have some means to let him write code. aside from adding IDE project files, and I switched to Jelly. I believe this was also done for that purpose. I needed to come up with some ways to add the view from the plugins.
Wow. So do you remember what the first plugins were?
I think, I should have researched that one too. Actually, maybe I can find
Green Balls.
I think it's
Norse.
I think it's Text Finder plugin. It looks for the regular expression inside log files to fail the build.
Wait, you mean the first few plugins were useful?
I'm like 80% of the remaining 1,000. No offense on the plugin miners. Most of mine are useless too.
Jesse probably wrote a NetBeans plugin, so
no comment.
And then in 160, so that's in 2 years, I got the 100th ticket file. So it took about 2 years to go through 100 tickets, and now you get like 10 per day or so.
That's all?
Those are all that was on Java.net that we were getting those tickets.
Yeah, this is all on
Issuezilla.
That awful Bugzilla thing.
Fork of Bugzilla.
Right.
Wow. You really can't get that much worse.
But, you know, good thing we did this like a conversion of the tools, because all these things are nice.
Hey, you can still navigate.
Yeah, you can still see it. And then
thank you, Andrew.
I think it's 100. Yeah, so yes, the Andrew, he did the migration, didn't he?
That's
a lame issue, too.
The most recent place that I've seen Jelly other than Jenkins was in scripting in Jira to do imports. When I imported all the Hudson Java.net issues into Jenkins, into Hudson Jira at the time.
I guess the Jelly happened there in 2006, so that was, I think, when the Maven was still one, right? Not two.
Yeah Maven was still, I think, before Maven 2, so it's when Jelly still
XML was still a thing.
XML will always be a thing as long as you were alive.
And then I was also surprised that the Groovy console was added like on 60. It was ancient. And then I think the DB got, and then we switched to Maven. So now I can track the DB history. And it was, originally it wasn't actually like a weekly schedule. I forgot to research when we started going into this DB model of like a one every weekend. But early on it was like whenever I added something new, that was the DBs. And then it went into like a Java 5 support. But apparently
1.97.
And this was already, I forgot when Java 5 was released.
2007, you got the health report?
Yeah, so this was the one of the things that Stephen Connolly added. I remember because I really didn't think this was a good idea. but he has a way of arguing. So.
I tend to agree with you because I've seen that crash systems.
Well, but I think it turned out in the end, this was one of the episodes where I made me realize that I could be so completely wrong, because people really like this.
I've seen some people really like it, but some people not understand. Like, it's partly cloudy. I don't understand what this means. My build is raining. I don't know. As soon as you know what it means, it becomes very useful.
Yeah.
But for the sort of initial users, when I would show them Hudson at the time, they're like, what do rain clouds mean?
It's actually kind of interesting now that we're talking about this, because you think about, you know, weather, it's usually forecast about the future. It's not a predictor, right? This thing is showing you the past.
I'm still not even sure I actually know what they mean. I've never paid attention to them.
It's supposed to be a trend, right?
What
percent of your recent builds
I don't
are
think I
enough?
Ever look at them. Ever.
Yeah, they're like,
I'm sure they're perfectly fine and all. It's just.
All right. So I'll keep right on going.
Moving on.
I'm also, so this was another, like, thing.
Don't skip over Matrix. I'm talking about Matrix projects. I love Matrix projects. What?
Was this your doing?
No, it wasn't.
No.
This was way before I heard of Hudson. But it's like, I love them and I love what they do. And it seems like everybody can't understand them. They hate them.
For the longest time, though, it literally said in the job configuration, alpha, to where, no one that I worked with would even dare consider using Matrix builds. Because they're like, this is not ready for me. I'm surely not supposed to be able to use this feature because it's alpha. I can't touch it. To where I remember way, way further on in the chronology that when Matrix builds were considered like a thing, they're normal, they're part of Jenkins. It was well after I had started using Jenkins. It was
no more recently than 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was still there well after the rename.
They're useful, they're great, but for the longest time I was scared to touch them at all, because if I was scared to touch them, I was certain that any plugin developer whose plugins I would be using was also scared to ever consider testing with Matrix builds.
I still consider it beta. There's still no way to, you still have to actually deliberately add an access for a slave if you want to specify where it runs. Where the child builds run.
Oh, there's a plugin for that.
Well, there are plugins for that, but I consider that a core feature that's not there.
Well, Matrix isn't actually a core feature anymore. It's
core feature of the plugin.
Okay, I was going to say. Matrix actually got
moved into a plugin.
I was surprised to see that very recently, I think. Matrix itself.
Right.
How long is it until Abstract Project is in a plugin? Until Jenkins.model.jenkins is in a plugin.
Jenkins server will be nothing but interfaces.
To plugins.
Yeah, yeah.
Generics.
So moving right on, here's the next thing. So this is another thing I find noteworthy. Like, it took about 165 releases before I added any access control. And here this program that can launch any processes under my account on the Sun corporate network, and then it didn't occur to me for about 3 years before adding any access control.
So is that why Sun failed?
I love that culture. You can do whatever.
Except make money.
Very trusting.
Yeah, it's very trusting.
Users are scary.
It even let me get into this lab that's connected to the internet, and I can just plug in the box to get the public IP. So that's wonderful. And then 2008.
I want to actually mention that they in 1.2.2.2 whatever.
In
early 2008, the addition of the update center, I think, is actually one of the most brilliant things about Jenkins. I've had people comment to me when they're building their own things that are extensible plugins. They're like, yeah, I really wish we had something as easy to use for installing stuff as the update center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's before an app store was a thing, and yet it basically was an app store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this turned out to be very important for creating the community.
Sun file patents on your App Store ID?
If so, they forgot where they put them. Don't say that, because that would mean Oracle would own them now.
They're lost to the ages.
But one thing that's related to that, when you mentioned something that's inspired other projects, is this fact that Jenkins is bundled as a single WAR file, and you can just run that completely self-contained
right,
with its own web server with everything. That seems to be something that's inspired, been an inspiration for a lot of other open source projects.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, and even in the cases where it wasn't actually inspiration, definitely a trendsetter on that front.
Yeah.
I remember reading this someone blog post trying to merge I think the PDF and zip file, the zip file has a structure at the end and PDF at the beginning, so you could combine those two.
Yeah.
And I was reading it, the WAR file is actually a JAR file, so maybe I could do the same thing, trying to kind of make the WAR file a JAR file. So to me, it was just a mentally side hobby view.
Yeah, and while I think we can all at times bemoan the pain from having all of the data on disk in serialized XML format rather than, say, any kind of database.
Mm.
For ease of adoption, when you compare it to anything else that you have to set up, everything requires you to set up a database. It's everything has its MySQL configuration directions.
Are you familiar with Garrett? the code review tool?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in sometime further along, I actually started looking at Garrett, and the original setup instructions
mm-hmm.
were incredible. They're so long and drawn out. Garrett required at that time a JDBC database,
mm-hmm.
and the fine folks at Google had only ever tested it with Postgres.
Right.
I didn't have Postgres running around. But I remember coming from Hudson at the time to Garrett and being like, this is awful. This, I don't want to use this. This is so bad. But I had sort of, they weren't familiar with Jenkins at the, or Hudson at the time. Tara's like, here's the thing that I want. Do that.
Mm.
And over the next couple releases of Garrett, they actually adopted a lot of that model to where Garrett, it still uses his database underneath, but it uses H2 by default.
Right.
And it comes in sort of this self-executing WAR format to where as soon as they got those changes in, Garrett also started to get much more adopted in a lot of places. Like that initial sort of, if it takes me longer than a couple minutes to understand how I'm even going to try this thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Garrett made that change and it became a very...
more of a pain to set up than Jenkins.
Oh, yeah.
By a long shot. There are very few apps I've ever seen that are as powerful as Jenkins, that are
mm-hmm.
as trivial to set up initially.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that when I added the server container inside Jenkins, I originally wanted to use Jelly, which is by then already well proven. But the Sun had a competing project going on with Jelly, so like I took some heat for that. And then so I had to switch back to Winston.
And then you fork Winston, as you fork
mm-hmm.
most of our dependencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of Winston, they just the upstream seeds development, so it ended up like us taking it on, and later we came full circle by making Winston Jelly. So that's like a 5-year plan to get that going. And then so in 2008, it turned out that that's when like a post from Dean and Tyler and appeared on the users list. Or I think the Dean actually posted to the dev list first. So
I think
like,
I actually posted the user list by mistake and realized that was a dev question. I should have gone to the dev list.
So he was already hardcore. And Tyler is like the first post is, hey, I created this IRC channel. Please come join
us. It is one of the most selfish things I did at the beginning of the project. Like I literally posted because I couldn't be bothered to go through the user list rigmarole.
Mm.
So I originally created the channel. I was surprised that it didn't exist, but I was like, I need answers now. So I was very happy when you started joining the channel because it was like direct line to you to where I could be like, hey, so this funny thing, I don't understand. And you would explain it. And that'd be super great to where I started to like my solution to everything at the time was IRC. Like if I had questions about particular APIs, I had to get people on IRC.
Mm.
And so I actually didn't really, and I still kind of don't participate in the users list and sometimes the dev list. Because for me, it's a lot more of the real-time communications, or I'll forget about it.
You're too impatient. You can't do async communications.
it's kind of
you're not threaded.
No.
It's kind of interesting that, now when I think about where the community is, I feel like the significant part of it is actually on the IRC channel. That seems to be where people build bonding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that was a very useful thing. Initially, I was like, okay, what is this new thing called IRC?
And why is this Tyler guy going to be in my life for the next 7 years?
little did you know.
And then in 2008 Q4, we started collecting the usage stats. And then, so from this point, we have some ideas about how the usage has grown.
Is it still encrypted with your personal key?
Still encrypted.
Are you still the only one who can decrypt the... and scrub the stats.
Is this another single point of failure?
I just remember when we first like, oh yeah, we should actually do something with that data.
Okay,
that took a while. I think.
Yeah.
I'm gonna file another spot ticket.
Okay, it could be. Yeah. Well, it could be because it would be only much later we came up with the scheme to hide secrets.
It was at the earliest a year and a half after that, because it was, or no, a year after that. It was before you left. It was before you left Oracle slash Sun slash whatever.
Filed.
This is becoming a productive call. And then a lot more of functionality seems to be again. It's kind of
the horribly overabused CLI.
Yeah, so in 2009 I added the CLI, and then I think one angry night I added automated JDK installations that had to go through the cookie emulations.
That's before we made it legal.
2009 really when you did your first contribution, Dean?
That was my first contribution to
the core.
But you know, we forked Hudson internally at Yahoo. So, you know, we had all these customizations running in-house for a long time. It just took that long to get the OKs to start actually contributing some of this stuff back. What was happening was
couldn't trust your users.
There was that. but
trust people who voluntarily work at Yahoo.
So the funny thing was, at the time I was in the Java platform group at Yahoo. So we're making all the conventions for all the Java groups inside the company, and to this day this is probably like the worst reason to hand a project over to groups like, hey, we're interested in CI, we'd like Hudson. Hudson's written in Java. They're Java platform group. You run with it, right? So that's kind of how I got involved inside Yahoo. Yahoo also has their security group. It's called the Paranoids, and they actually are pretty rigorous about vetting stuff that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you take on a project from the outside, you have to go through this paranoid review. It's like, what are the possible attack vectors? What are the ways this can be abused and let stuff into
the
network?
They gave you.
Yeah, and so we met with them. We told them what it was, and they're like, you want to do what? And so that's where
it's remote shell as a service.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you like that?
So on the one hand, while a lot of my time, in that first year was spent doing stuff like CRSRF and all this other stuff to kind of bulletproof Hudson, for use within Yahoo. It also went the other way because it kind of forced the paranoid to open up a little bit because they realized their rules were so draconian that we can never actually automate. So it kind of was a spearhead for that type of discussion.
So you're saying you were them enough that they gave you three hands?
Nah, I mean, we had to balance it, right? So we had to really secure how slaves get launched, stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the hardest thing was actually my first post was related to how the authentication worked. Because we had an internal single sign-on that was entirely cookie-based. It's totally non-standard. I could not for life figure out how to actually work that into a CG.
And then this turns out that by this point, by 2009, the use of my time spent on Hudson must have become significant enough that I saw some internal notes at Sun about trying to productize this effort, like a Sun continuous integration server.
I remember the SCIS-ad plugin.
Yeah. I added some advertisement to the plugin.
I actually remember this. I think, as a matter of fact, this is about the time that you reached out to me. It's like, hey, I see you're using Hudson at Yahoo. We'd really be interested in talking to you and see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think it was actually around this.
I don't remember if that was a sales motivated conversation. I think I think I had struggled to get some contribution either from Yahoo for a while. And then I wanted to see what because
I'd forgotten all about that.
And then
the most ham-fisted productizing
open source. No. There's no such thing. It's never going to be possible to be the most ham-fisted. There's always some more god-awful attempt to commercialize an open source project.
We should maybe not name names.
Oh, I'm not naming names. I don't have to name names. There's always something worse. The worst thing you've thought of, there's something worse.
That's fair.
And I'm also a bit surprised that I think the first ever meetup recorded at least I can find was only in 2009.
But the birds of a feather a couple months beforehand at Java 1 is when I met Tyler and Kosuke, and Kosuke met Tyler and me, and
I think at that time I was only living a few blocks from you as well.
Yeah, you were. That was when you were in the Upper Haight,
yeah.
Or Middle Haight, actually.
The Haight, yeah.
I was still down in Hayes Valley.
I don't have any impression. I don't have any memory on the first time I met you guys.
No, that's because you were the one presenting. He and I were sitting in the back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we coordinated vaguely on IRC.
You're the peanut gallery.
Yeah, we were sitting there with our laptops. Tyler with his press badge.
Yes.
Was very proud of that. Still is.
I don't actually remember that first meetup either.
I remember it because I left my laptop at home and I had to go get it and come back.
So I actually remember this.
And slide had a nice
office. I even remember what I ate for the lunch. Like you took us all to this like a burger place. And yesterday, I guess that happened in Sliding, which is where you used to work.
Yeah.
Like a number of people came.
So he worked for me. He actually helped, Adam Christian helped co-found Sauce Labs. He and I had actually worked on a lot of the CI stuff at Slide.
Oh, really?
Then there's you, Andrew, Mike Rooney, I actually haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah.
Victor, I see Victor every time I go to Scale.
Chris Lewis apparently tried to refer me at Google recently. Chris, if you hear this, no.
And then Tom, I don't remember Tom. I remember it at the time, so to me, meeting other people who are interested in this was eye-opening entirely to me, because I'd never really met other people in open source. That wasn't a thing that I had done before coming to California.
Oh, really?
Open source was all people on IRC and mailing list. Never any sort of face-to-face kind of thing.
See, you still got me beat there in that I had done no open source until Hudson. I was buried off doing in call center software at Cisco, doing builds, and then was working on porting stuff to Maven and from Ant, and needed a from my own custom Ant libraries. No, they lasted 3 years before I decided I hated them.
Back then, everyone did that.
And I saw a presentation by a coworker about Maven, and he talked about this Hudson thing. I needed a new build server for this stuff because I didn't want touching everything else that I already had set up on my hacked together Perl CI server. Hey, I'm still a Perl hacker at heart.
Yeah.
So
that is so you.
Please do that.
Yeah. And then that's how I first got involved, and I never actually checked to see in detail whether I actually had to get Cisco to agree to any kind of CLA and just sign the ICLA and roll with it. And sorry, Cisco, I don't work for you anymore. So, and that's how I got into the world that I live in today. In my career today is entirely because of Jenkins.
So on early days, this kind of time, it must have been spreading mostly through the world of mouse, because I don't remember doing any marketing-ish activities.
I don't remember you doing any marketing.
I don't know. scis-ad.hpi.
I actually don't remember how I had stumbled into Hudson. I was telling a guy I work with today who was wondering why I have such strong opinions about CI. The first thing that I had done at Slide when I came out was I had installed... I hated cruise control, so I installed cruisecontrol.net because my background was in .NET, and I hated that too. And I went hunting for something else, and so there's like BuildBot, there's do-it-yourself kind of things. And at some point, I don't remember when, I stumbled across Hudson, and that's when I wrote that sort of, holy shit, this is amazing. I just typed java-jar Hudson.war, and it does a thing. That's amazing, great. I had gone through the sort of standard stuff at the time, which was all crap. And I don't remember the jump between all of the crap that kind of existed that people used for CI to Hudson. Clearly after I found Hudson, that was it.
Yeah, and you also clearly took it up on yourself to becoming a marketing guy in the project. I think you started doing this blog on the Hudson site, and yeah, early on, you almost have like a daily post. You have this like a various program going on, like the user highlight and like a plugin of the week. And...
yeah, you kind of went insane for a while there.
So it was something to do. I didn't have a lot else to do, I guess.
Did you have some SUSE community thing to do?
I did.
With your other open source hobbies?
I really enjoyed blogging in 2010. I don't care as much anymore.
I think it was really useful, this spread thinking, to many, many people. So.
Well, I remember when I first started talking with you, like, it was very clear to me at the time that it was not a question of desire on your side from like writing or documenting or things like that. It was you genuinely didn't either have the time or understand like you do now exactly what the sort of avenues for engaging with users and developers were. And so I felt I didn't want to write code at that time. I absolutely did not want to touch Java code. I was steadfast against it. Which
it was adorable.
But I wanted to, like, it was something that I was so impressed with Hudson, and I really, really liked it enough to where I wanted to find other people that would improve it. Like, I didn't want to be the improving guy. I wanted to be like, hey, this is great. You should also use it and improve it. But that's, like, this is the only project that I've ever really, really done that for. I've been involved in a couple other open source projects, but nothing in the way that I really got into cheerleading for Hudson a lot in the early days, because at that time it didn't seem like anyone else really was.
I mean, I guess at some
point now,
yeah, we are used to.
Well, now there's a marketing budget.
So it's amazing how far we come. I'm also a bit surprised that this happened in like as late as 2010.
2010 was, we had pretty much a ridiculously eventful 12 months.
Yeah.
From like February 2010 through...
I bet if you were to go back and look at it, sort of the number of committers and the number, going with the stats, the number of users, I think 2010 is when
the hockey stick
started to really...
Yeah.
Like, I think the project had, the feature set was there, and the project as an open source community had reached enough of a critical mass to where it wasn't just, you know, reliant on you and Jesse or other people inside of Sun or Dean inside of Yahoo sort of talking about it. There was other people that were just coming into the project organically or referrals in some form or fashion, to where that's when the sort of word of mouth really started to pick up in a big way.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, the user stats, when I look at that. Well, of course, I can't see anything, but the 2010 is probably around here.
So that's 2010 is when we started.
Right, so
climbing
up into the different trajectories. So yes, in many ways, that's like a fateful year. And then, so that's also the year that I left Oracle. And then, so I found a post that the Tyler did, and he was kind enough to say, like, I left Sun, as opposed to like I left Oracle.
You didn't leave Sun. Sun left you.
that's true too.
Go back to that.
I remember us, the three of us, huddling in the squat and gobble on Haight Street.
Yes. Yeah. So that was. I remember like having ice creams.
So this is by far one of my favorite, both Kosuke and Jenkins stories was. Kosuke was sort of, it seemed like he was at the sort of crossroads to where he'd been at Sun for quite a long time, and it seemed like there was, you had a lot of mixed emotions about leaving it, but Oracle clearly wasn't, it wasn't a fit for you. To where I remember standing eating ice cream on Haight Street and effectively making an impassioned plea for the open source community and the obligations that you have to the community, and that this is something that, like, it means something.
Did you say it was your moral imperative?
No, it was not that wanky. No, it actually was.
That guy, you know?
I mean, I was backing you up, but that was mainly Tyler. I mean, that was a very impassioned.
I feel like with you leaving Oracle, that there's that period of time to where I think the most important thing that happened was not that you had left Oracle and that these other things had changed, but I think, at least from my outsider perspective, it was when I think me and Andrew and other members of the community convinced you that this was something of genuine long-term value and importance to software. To where I remember InfraDNA got founded at some point after that.
Formerly known as Kosuke Corp or Hudson Labs or...
Hudson Labs was a different thing.
Sort of.
Yeah.
We actually debated that at the table that night.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I remember.
And I think when we were talking about calling you, like, I wanted to call it Pharaoh or something like that. I don't remember.
Right.
Slave driving. And building. I mean, come on. It's
yeah.
I have released the idea of a CI tool called Pharaoh out into the wild.
At one point, I had registered... I don't know if I registered Hudson CI, but I had Alfred CI, Farrah CI, and Jenkins CI ultimately registered.
I'm still bitter about Alfred, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, so my recollection of that night was, like, I think the title was actually making this like a case that you have to fork. It's like you already have to,
We just had to own the infra.
I was nowhere near that sort of feeling.
Tyler was very Tyler about it. Fork all the things, screw every corporation, authority figures scare me.
So this is actually interesting. It's like, I actually haven't heard a lot of this backstory. So did you ever feel around this time that kind of your creation was starting to spiral out of your control?
Well, I mean, okay. Yeah. I don't know if it went out of control, but I mean, I obviously...
Or not out of control, but kind of bigger than you?
Yeah, I mean, it was significant enough that I figured I could afford to live on it without working on Sun or Oracle. So there's that. But I don't know at what point I started feeling like this is more than just my project. I don't have a... It happened more gradually, I think. There was no single event to sort of really mark. But that night I remember a lot, and I'm sort of happy that you guys do. For a while it was quiet. I think it took about like a half a year until
There was when I volunteered. I helped you out at the InfraDNA booth the 1 year at Java 1.
Yeah.
I have a shirt still.
Yeah, I think that was Java 1 in...
I may or may not still have the shirt.
Yeah.
This time, and and then I
remember you having to leave the booth to go have a talk with Sasha.
Right. Yeah, and I remember
Oracle
guy came over, and then they didn't expect this backstage decoration we put on. She's threatened to take us down, so we have to remove it.
Good times.
Yeah, and then. So that's, I think, and then the last, after this, like, a Java.net outage, which sort of took things down for...
Yeah, so we'd already started by November of 2010, we'd already started gradually moving more and more stuff to GitHub. New plugins, I'd moved some of my plugins, we were getting there. And then Java.net shat itself to death. And suddenly our SVN didn't exist, our email didn't exist, our downloads didn't exist.
Yeah.
We were crippled. So over a week or so period, we went nuts. We ported everything to Google Groups. We ported everything to GitHub. We registered HudsonCI.org. Or we finally got around to switching to our own infra for downloads. It was a batty week and a half or so, Thanksgiving week. And then the next week, something happened.
My recollection of this whole thing, the eventual divorce, in February next year. So it took, it's been...
2 months.
It had been stewing. So the trademark for Hudson was filed in October 2010.
Okay.
Yep.
And in early November of 2010, we were told that we could not release something named Hudson without approval by Oracle.
Really? I thought that didn't come till after the GitHub thing.
Well, we were migrating to GitHub.
We didn't get the email from the VP until after Thanksgiving.
So it was during the discussion we were having on the dev list about moving everything over to GitHub that said aforementioned VP arrived. Through the email chain, ultimately at some point, and this may have happened towards the end of November, it was plainly stated that we could not release something named Hudson because Oracle owned the trademark without consent by Oracle.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when...
At some point, you had this, like, summary.
Yeah, don't you remember your various passionate diatribes?
Man.
Yeah, no, that
I wrote
so,
a
yeah.
lot back in the day.
So yeah,
I remember this.
Yeah, the beginning of November was when the question of ownership came up, and we gave Oracle's the Oracle engineer who was put on the project co-ownership in Java.NET.
Yeah.
That was not the release question.
That happened.
Yeah. Then suddenly, as we hit Thanksgiving week, all hell broke loose.
I don't remember, actually, during this, like, a CMS period, I don't remember, have we actually ever met?
You did.
Met who?
Aforementioned.
Well, okay. Well,
no, yes. I did, but we haven't gotten to that point.
I mean, but did we meet?
Yeah, I think we did
we
after,
met
at we'd actually met up in October at a meetup at DIG, where I was working at the time.
Oh, great.
Which is where we met the Oracle people involved. We emailed all the damn time once all hell broke loose. So Thanksgiving week, we set the deadline. We said I proposed moving to Google Groups 2 weeks earlier, and that was overwhelmingly approved. I proposed moving to GitHub the Friday after Thanksgiving. Okay, the lights are starting going out. And that was approved. And then, yeah, hit the read more there. Monday morning.
Hit the what?
Monday morning, after the day before we were supposed to switch
this
over.
This is a long blog.
Yeah, we aren't going to read the emails, but this is all who's driving this thing on the Jenkins blog. We get an email from the SVP at Oracle basically saying, no, you can't do that. We own the trademark. And that led to 2 months of negotiation drama.
I remember like the all the places where I did these long conference calls.
Many conference calls. So many times I'm like, why are all these people in this discussion? Who are these people? And me trying to keep you from having to deal with said senior VP.
Anyway,
we spent 2 months in negotiations in various forms over ownership of the project, governance of the project, trying to make compromises so that Oracle would be willing to concede the trademark in some form to some third party. We even proposed going to Eclipse at one point.
Yeah.
They rejected that, which was ironic and amusing given the future. And eventually, coming into late January, early February, about a month and a half after Tyler first started demanding that we do something like this, I brought it to a vote on the mailing list of whether we should keep the name and play ball with Oracle or keep being ourselves and rename the project to Jenkins. And I'm still bitter that Alfred the
Alfred
Mac exists because I really wanted to name it Alfred.
I didn't want to have it come after us on that. Like,
oh, that's why we didn't do it, but I really wanted it. And so, yeah, then the vote, we did that vote on the user list.
294-4?
Fully audited. They had access. I did so much dotting of the I's and crossing of the T's and everything in terms of the vote and the negotiations.
Yeah.
I dragged it out, but damn if I didn't actually tie up the loose ends. And, yeah, it was final vote was something like 314-11. Amusingly, at least one person who ended up on the Eclipse proposal for Hudson a few months later voted to rename.
Okay.
And so we renamed.
Yeah, I think it's also important to mention that after all of this had gone on and you had been sort of the sacrificial lamb to do a lot of these negotiations, if I remember correctly, you fucked off for a couple months and were pretty burnt out.
I have not done a lot of hacking on Jenkins. Using Jenkins, sure, but I kind of feel like I to a certain extent served my main purpose in Jenkins.
You can now board the Elven ship and go back to.
I midwifed the name into existence. I played a role in getting us to being a truly independent, self-owned project. Did we ever register a trademark?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, it's in some classification I forwarded the email. It actually happened relatively recently.
I know we kept forgetting to do that. And we kept bugging you to do it. But
we can put power.
Yeah. But so I'm so really proud of that because we did it right.
Mm-hmm.
We did not take our toys and go home. We waited them out and one in the end. We have the best part still is that the first commit of the new Hudson project and their repo was renaming it from Jenkins to Hudson, which was the definitive, oh yeah, you guys forked moment. We did not fork to Jenkins. We renamed the project and we kept, I mean, when you have a 300-10, vote in the community, That's not a fork.
Yeah.
That's a rename. And I'm immensely proud of how, I mean, you guys were so much more skeptical about, especially Koskay, about how the project would do with Oracle having its own competitor. I'm like, yeah, but which one has Koskay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what are we going to have to worry about? I mean, really?
Yeah,
right. And, well, I was right.
Yeah, thanks for your faith in that.
I know you're good.
And then we did, I think, this logo contest. There was about like 11 community submitted posts, and some really like look familiar, like they're the Monopoly guy and then there's like a Pringles guy. And
various things that look like the old Microsoft clip art logo.
Yeah, I think they're right. So
the finalists that we had, where there's this robot Jenkins. Was one of them, then the Jenkins we have now, and then this yellow bowtie Jenkins.
So the final, how do you call it, like the last two...
The finalists.
Finalists were actually the 9 and 10, Pringles or the current Jenkins logo.
We definitely got a good logo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we got the great fun moment of getting to pass the word through back channels to Oracle that their Hudson logo was, in fact, the Microsoft trademark clip art.
Well, I don't know if it's trademark, but I mean, clearly they must have talked to the lawyers and made it okay because it's just confusing. But a funny thing, I occasionally come across that image in some other random website.
Oh, I remember there was a gardening company in Utah.
Yeah.
That was the Hudson logo, except with green rather than.
So the logo that we ended up going with was drawn by a designer at a company called The Front Side in Austin. And Charles Lowell, who actually ended up, he got them to do this for us, but he also ended up contributing hugely to the experimental Ruby plugin support, which has since sort of lapsed.
And the first time we actually got you to write plugins.
Yes. I wrote a very poorly supported plugin.
So have we all.
But what I actually really like about this logo contest is he basically asked for a favor from a designer at The Front Side, and they effectively donated this logo to us.
And it is a truly fantastic logo.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of us are wearing shirts with it right now?
1, 2, 3. Dean.
I was expecting.
I didn't get
them
out.
I thought everybody was going to come wearing Jenkins shirts.
It's a podcast. Who's going to see us?
Principle. Solidarity.
It's the idea.
Hey, Tyler, you're not wearing a Jenkins shirt,
no.
You're wearing a corporate shirt.
So the only Jenkins shirt that I actually have was from the first Jenkins user conference.
This is because you don't go to conferences enough.
It's That's true.
I got three t-shirts at the last conference I was at.
So first Jenkins conference, I don't know who it was, but they actually, I don't know how, messed it up to where it's the bow tie is blue.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why.
Right, yeah.
Like, you already have the red color on there. I don't know how, but I've got this, you know, limited edition first Jenkins user conference defective.
Yeah, it shows it's like the upside down Jenny stamp.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder why that color. I don't think I actually have any red in it. So.
It should be a blue tie to go with blue balls for success.
this is
a failed build tie.
All builds are failed builds. Some of them are just less failed than others.
So the Charles Baker told me that that red circle behind the scene was like a motif from the Rising Sun in Japan.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Which makes me think of the samurai variant.
Yeah. Whether that's true or he afterthought, I don't know, but he was nice. Yeah.
It's a very versatile logo. We've got some interesting variants.
Yeah, right.
For example, the angry,
500.
The 500 error, fiery, evil Jenkins. Like,
oh, God, demon Jenkins.
That's pretty terrifying.
I saw that for the first time the other week.
So
disturbing. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah,
every time I get that, I'm like, oh, God, this means something went really wrong.
Yeah. There's also this emotional Jenkins plugin now where if your build is sad, sad Jenkins or happy Jenkins or whatever Jenkins.
And it's all done by the same guy, by the way, in Japan.
Yeah.
All right.
And he was the one also did this ninja Jenkins, superhero Jenkins. And he had this like a Nazi Gestapo Jenkins. And
we don't need that. Though we did get Octo Jenkins, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there is an Octo Jenkins from GitHub as well.
Yeah.
Is that blinking for a good reason?
Yes.
It's been blinking all along.
Okay.
So, 2011 Q3, by then it's pretty damned clear that
first Jenkins conference.
That the project
is
thriving and succeeding, and then holy crap, we had 250 people show up for the first conference, I think.
Yeah.
It was, when I stood up to introduce you at the beginning, I'm like, the hell? Why are there so many people looking at me?
That's funny.
That was an amazing day. Just realizing there were that many people who wanted to hear people talk about Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was Tyler talking.
And then I'm also surprised, by then we still haven't done any post-demo scale. Like, could that be really true?
This is actually what I really, really like about your attitude towards FOSDEM and scale, is that it's hard for you to remember when you didn't go.
Mm.
Because to me, this FOSDEM in 2012 was the second time I had gone. I'd gone once in 2005 and then forgotten about it. But I've been every year since. And it is, to me, FOSDEM and then Scale are two of the best conferences that I've been to. Like, I feel at home with open source people at both of those.
And every year I find myself thinking, okay, this is the year I'll actually go with them to FOSDEM. Every year, and I never follow through.
So that's the first time that Jenkins went international in terms of conferences?
Well, there have been the Tokyo meetups.
Yeah,
I'd actually given talks in...
All right.
Copenhagen. Yeah.
Okay. What some people don't know is that Kosuke already had a huge following of fans in
Dash
Tokyo.
JA.
So he'd been going to Japan around Jenkins stuff, I think, for a while before.
Yeah. Well, that's true, because actually the first time I met Kosuke was in Hamburg in 2011, I think.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Because basically whenever Kosuke goes traveling for business reasons, he says, well, I'm in this country anyway, let's have a Jenkins meetup.
Yeah.
And I have tried to ape that, but not done as good a job. But I try to find something I can give a Jenkins talk at, in part so I can get work to pay for the flight. But also because that's how I meet people.
Yeah.
So it's wandering around Europe giving talks.
Yeah, so that's how it happened with me. So we had a meetup in Hamburg sometime in 2011, and there was quite a few people turned up.
I remember meeting Kutzi there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Christoph is there, and Fred, and there's a lot of people there. It's quite a big event.
See, I didn't meet Fred till summer of 2012.
All right.
And this meetup in Tokyo was just like that. Okay, I'd be going there, so I thought I'd have a meetup. And I have a very, so the, before that, all the meetups we've done before in San Francisco, were relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
Even in Hakka-dojo, it's like 20-year-old people. So my expectation going into Tokyo would be about the same number. So, all right, and it turns out that there's like 262 people signed up. So I'm like, oh, well, I'm gonna do this.
Aren't you like the most famous Japanese open source person who doesn't work on Ruby?
not by a long shot, but
he may be more well known than Mats.
No,
I don't think so.
In Japan or globally?
Globally, mm-hmm. Not even close.
More than Mats?
Not even close. Mats way more. Mats wrote Ruby. There are so many annoying people working in Ruby.
Anyway, that'll be a meetup.
You're a wannabe Carl. It's okay. Still like you more than Python.
Yeah, but at Tokyo consistently turns out lots of people for every meetup you do.
Mm-hmm.
The Tokyo conference sort of blew my mind.
Yeah, that was still the biggest.
Yeah.
And so that's a little.
Oh, you don't have it listed because that was 2012.
That might have been
2012. Yeah,
because it was the Olympics. It was the Summer Olympics. Yeah. I know this because I watched the opening ceremonies at 4 a.m. the night I got in, the morning after I got in because I was so unbelievably jet lagged. So I went down to the lobby waiting for breakfast to open. And there's the London Olympics opening ceremonies, dubbed in Japanese, and I'm totally confused. And that kind of set the tone for my entire trip in Tokyo. That and the sweltering to death later that day as Kosuke took Tyler and John and I
Kosuke
around.
Did not properly brief us on what. Tokyo summer.
Well, Kosuke also didn't properly brief us on what we were doing on the for the day. It's like, and now we're at this place. Okay, now we're at this place. I mean, part of it may have been that I think I actually had heat stroke. No, I'm only slightly kidding.
I got worried that like I took him all the way and within like in a 20-meter from podium and he can't do the talk. That'd be like super embarrassing.
That's okay. Nobody could. My talk was kind of a crash and burn failure anyway. There's nothing. I've never had any more intimidating moment in my life than speaking in front of a lecture hall, very large lecture hall of 400 or so people in just that one. Maybe 5% of which understood anything I was saying.
It's being transcribed.
Yeah,
but that's why I said understood what I was saying.
Ah, that's right.
I flopped.
It's all in your head, man.
Yeah, I'm not denying that.
But join the Jenkins Project, travel the world.
Yeah, I've gotten 2 continents out of Jenkins so far.
Yeah.
So
there you go. So I guess that's covered the timeline of the Jenkins Project.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we've got the internet. We've got the recurring conferences all over the place.
Yeah.
Including conferences that have a...
Have you been to Tel Aviv yet? Or the,
no,
the,
I'm not going
the,
to for various and sundry reasons.
All right.
But we've got the
Brazil.
Deadline for the call for proposals for talks for the June in talk in the northeast of the U.S. and in London for the Jenkins conferences.
Yeah.
So March 8th, get your talks in.
Yeah, thank you. Wow. Thanks. I didn't ask you.
I still have to submit my talk because Heidi insisted that I submit it, even though, yeah.
Let's see, now that I'm going to edit this part out, but so what else maybe we should, so we spent about, I don't know, 1 hour.
I actually stopped the timer, because I realized that it would end awkwardly if I did not stop the timer. But I'm watching the time, and yeah.
So what else do we cover? Okay,
we covered this.
I think we covered that, all right.
We covered our dramatic triumph over Oracle. I mean, seriously, we don't need to edit this part. We kicked Hudson's ass. I it's what I expected, but I mean... But it's, yeah, I'm being a little triumphant, but I mean, come on, we beat Goliath.
You're standing atop a dead horse, and
everyone else has moved on, Andrew.
I don't care, that's my shining moment, that's my glory. I'm not going to ever have anything else, okay? I'm on the way down.
We are so going to have to edit this thing.
Why? Me self-humiliating is pretty much just normal.
Good soundbites.
Soundbites, exactly.
So where are we in the project now?
Yeah, so what?
Where's the project at?
Are we going to do this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to skip these things.
Yeah. We don't need.
We should lament about these things later.
About what we do differently?
Yeah.
Like possibly something other than serialized to disk XML?
No, I was thinking
I just remember you.
I was thinking more about that remoting thing.
Oh, God, let's not even go there.
You don't like that?
No.
Okay.
That is pure voodoo. I spent 6 months of my job trying to understand that library.
When I first had a glimmer of an understanding of what it did was the moment I realized that Kosuke was at least two orders of magnitude smarter than me. And just like, wait, how does that not die every single time? It makes no sense. It is black magic. It is the most bizarrely wonderful thing you've ever written.
I mean, okay, so I admit that the part of it is that I think this is doable and I wanted to actually be able to see it in action. I mean, not to project that I do study that way, but... But anyway, so is it that bad?
No, it's not bad. It's just magic.
It's just hard to understand. And at the time at Yahoo, what I hated about it was ultimately, like, it was bottlenecked at the communication channel.
I hate that it keeps dying on me spontaneously, but there's various and sundry reasons for that.
Previously I was involved in this, like, a SOAP and XML RPC and stuff. So, like, I was fed up with this notion that we kind of have to define these, like an RPC or the remote call interfaces, whether that's...
Oh, this is definitely better than SOAP. No, I mean, it's black magic, but it's awesome black magic. Jesse understands it now, right? Please tell me somebody else understands.
Do I need to file another Spock ticket?
Because, I think that's a Spock that is if no one else understands it now, then it's just ununderstandable. But I know he's worked on the NETI remoting stuff, the NIO remoting stuff. So hopefully we know something about this stuff.
Well, NIO remoting, I wrote that too.
Guess we just have to rely on the fact that it hasn't died on us yet.
And I think Jesse doesn't want to say yes, he understands it, because then everyone, oh great, now you understand.
Oh no. Jesse doesn't understand it at all, and we all understand that. But.
We could all pretend that Jesse understands it and still give him all the shit that he
does. No, that's just cruel.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
You're a worse person than I am.
He's a very
interesting... He works for Jesse.
How many of you met?
I finally met Jesse at Java 1 last year and was then amused to find he lives about 3/4 of a mile from my mom.
In Boston?
He's in Medford. My mom's in Arlington, just over the line from Medford. Where I'm going home in just a couple days. That was amusing to me. But it was great to meet Jesse, just because, like, holy crap. I mean, that's been one of my favorite things with the project all along. I mean, like, when I did my first Europe trip with Jenkins, and I met Olivier Lamy and Arnaud Eltier in Paris, and they took me out to a glorious 3-hour lunch. It was one of the best meals I've ever had. Oh, God. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm meeting these people I know from online. And meeting Dr. Uli at the talk in Munich. Meeting God knows how many people I knew solely from mailing lists at the Tokyo dinner.
That's really a joy of the open source community.
And meeting Bobby Sandel for the first time. And Chris. And, I mean, there were so many people I met at the Berlin conference last year. Kutsi, Daniel Beck, any number of people.
So, Dean, I think you're the only one that's not, like, traveling on behalf of
the country
of
already.
I love it. I did all my world traveling before I was 20. I'm done.
You got visa issues? Fosdem, 2016.
Nah. Jacob's Conference London, June. I'm going.
We'll see.
Believe in yourself. You can do it.
I'm going to miss the San Francisco Conference this year. I seem to be an every other year kind of thing.
It's not in Palo Alto this year, so I'm not going.
It wasn't in Palo Alto last year.
Wasn't it?
No, it was at the airport.
Why?
Yeah, it was very inconvenient because I didn't have a car anymore.
I didn't go to the airport.
I gave away my car in September.
So trying to tie it back to the topic on Thailand, one of the struggles that I still have is to get into some of the other regions in which there should be big users, like India, China,
and so
on.
Not a lot of Jenkins.
I remember when you first gave Tyler and I access to the usage data, when you scrubbed it of identifying information. And Tyler and I started, I started doing reports on where the hell we were getting this from, and we're like, my God, Tehran? University of Tehran.
That's how Stuxnet got out.
No, it wasn't a Windows box. It was a Linux box. that was download logs, was how I was able to find that one. I think that the country, there was none from Burma and none from North Korea, but pretty much every other country I could think of. Cuba.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and we were already everywhere.
I think with India and China, we probably face a similar issue that we have in Japan.
Right.
In that there's very likely an insular community there, and there's a language barrier.
Well, not in India. There's no language barrier to tech in India. There may be an understanding barrier, but not a language barrier.
Okay, I'll accept your terms.
Yeah, so I guess I need some help from someone who is in those communities to take us in there. Like in Korea, I managed to find somebody that could us get there. We did meet up, and it was really great.
There's got to be a community in Shanghai.
Yeah.
There's a lot of startups in Shanghai.
Yeah.
Y'all have fun with that.
And it's also interesting.
I mean, I'll go. I can't bring any of my equipment with me. But I'll go.
Even in existing countries, the way these community work is very, very different. Mm-hmm. Like a temperature difference. And so, when I go to Germany, every hackathon we do is incredibly productive.
And regimented.
Yeah. I don't know why.
People hack Zs and say Zs.
Sounds like a stereotype right now.
But it actually works. I like it.
And I'm refraining from making comments about the French community that they have certain ways. And
they eat really, really well. This is not a bad thing.
And so on and so forth. I wonder why.
It's a problem we've had as long as we've been sort of talking about open source community as something that's important to the project. Is identifying, I would say, local leaders or someone that can organize in various geographies or in various other communities. And it's not just the geography thing, but people in the Python community that are not necessarily influential, but passionate about something like Jenkins. So without someone that's already made themselves known in the Jenkins community from China or from Australia or Brazil.
We've got a couple of people in Australia. Olivier's there now.
That's
right. Oh, really?
Yeah, Olivier.
You're right, he is.
I learned that over the weekend.
But it's something that I don't think we can actually drive from here. We can help get people from one place to another, but picking a destination, I think, is dependent on someone there that's passionate about CI or Jenkins specifically.
I think it's also, the space that Jenkins plays in, it's also hard, right? Because if you think about, languages and even kernels, you can kind of have a hobbyist type of attitude for that stuff and just kind of tinker. You don't really tinker with a CI server, right? It's a job.
Well,
if you're Andrew or an Andrew-like shape, there's a particular kind of, a tools hacker or build engineer that tinkers with CI systems.
Oh yeah.
But it's definitely a.
But I mean, as a hobby or as part of, you know, what they do for work.
I did it as a hobby.
I don't know where the line is between my hobby and my work all the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's I mean, with this, with my Apache stuff, I mean, I honestly can't tell you how much of what I do day to day is day job, and how much is hobby I do during day job hours, mm-hmm. and what I.
I don't know how you would find that out, what the sort of split is in terms of people in the community, whether they're people who care about this as, mm-hmm. as a higher level concept in software engineering, or they're people doing Jenkins or working with Jenkins as a means to an end for business in some form or fashion. Like, I know that's not originally how I got into it. It sounds like that's how you got into
yeah.
to Jenkins. But I don't know how you would measure that split, but I think it'd be very interesting to know how many people are just sort of like, I would say, in it because they're interested in CI as a concept or test,
right.
you know, test automation as a concept.
Earlier in the life of the project, I think the more, this, you know, the whole idea of CI was still relatively new, so it's something that the random rogue people in the team did it. So it's relatively easy to find this, like, a people doing on the side, but I think it's becoming more and more important, and then the company started to do this more organized, like, more seriously.
The number of one-off CI as a service startups that exist, I think, is a good indication
yeah.
of how well adopted CI is conceptually in the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I can think of
how well adopted the CI as a buzzword is.
Yeah. yeah.
And how many of them were BC backed is the even more fascinating thing. They're all doomed.
I mean, like, it's something that no engineer is going to sit around, you know, thinking of stuff to go found a company on that isn't passionate about it. And I think people like Semaphore CI is something that comes to mind, or Travis CI. Those didn't come out of existing companies, at least from my understanding of their history. They came out of seeing what was available and wanting to solve the problem that they had in a different way. So there's some, it's at least in 2015, I think there's a hobbyist CI community that cares about, I wouldn't say CI specifically, but tests in automation infrastructure in a way that there wasn't in 2006 or 2007.
Well, I think there was then. It's just that we were all off in our own silo still. It was not I mean, I know I wrote a CI system. Hey, it worked.
Yep, sure.
It kept me from having to answer pages at 3 a.m. to run builds. I cannot tell you how much I loved that. And I know that other people did the same. But it wasn't until 2009, 2010, that all of us who had done that started raising our heads above our cubicle
yeah.
walls and discovered that, holy crap, somebody wrote something better, and it's open source.
Right.
And I think that, yeah, that's when the game change happened. And that's when we started writing all kinds of crazy plugins and... yeah, it was fun times.
Mm-hmm. All right, shall we expect to
let's get to the future.
Yeah, so let's see. So what should we do in the future? What does
board
this
members? I'm expecting a good answer.
Yeah, we should
have
a board
members.
Election.
Board members.
Yeah, we should have a board election so I can finally get off the board as I've been trying to for 3.5
you
years.
You could resign. I don't know. We don't have strict bylaws.
We don't have bylaws.
Yeah. But,
I only get to resign if we officially make you a board member as part of the process.
He kind of signed up for it, so.
Yeah,
I
we just.
Did.
Oh, you have officially accepted it?
Yeah, so.
I hereby resign as a board member.
How does the acceptance criteria work?
You're a board member.
Is there a knighting?
No. There's me going, all right, now I don't have to feel bad that I'm distracted during
the
meeting.
If you want me to take your place on the board, that actually, I think, makes something... All right.
Trading you.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
You get the San Francisco annoying white guy slot.
Yes. I can meet that requirement.
Is that a thing? What? White guy slot?
Okay, so fellow board members, what are we doing?
I'm emeritus.
what? Wait.
It's like, what? How does this happen?
Well, you do still have really? Veto, because I believe the closest we ever came to writing bylaws was when I actually stuck in that Kosuke has veto.
Well, so let's see. So the board needs to, we need to do something about the board, and we are technically still interim, and we didn't do...
Yeah, I think the board needs to do something about the board.
Yeah. So, I thought we partly wanted to add more people.
I think we wanted to go to 5.
And then, so, you know, I wasn't expecting a lot of places.
It was 2 years ago that the three of us started saying, you know, we really need to get around to doing this thing you said we were going to do 2 years ago.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that definitely...
I think Chris was one of our potential sucker board members, actually, when we were trying to think of candidates.
One of the
into
this.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. That doesn't work for cloudbees.
Yeah, that's the problem, is finding people involved in the project who won't work for
cloudbees. I don't work for cloudbees.
Yeah, I know that.
I'm on the board, I can go work for cloudbees. I'm eligible now.
I think partly we want diversity.
That's
the thing. So
I want Europeans.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Western European community.
European-ish.
Is pretty amazing.
Yeah, from different regions.
You're European, you're Scottish, and you live in Germany.
Yeah.
That's European. You're not English or anything.
I've got that going for me. no offense.
And then I guess I think the infra needs for lots of work.
That's not getting edited out. You can't ever go back to the UK.
No, you can go back to the UK, you just can't go to England. The Scots won't.
It's, no, it's all one thing. We didn't get independence.
Yeah, but anyway.
I think we've
Let's
diverged.
Let's not get into European politics.
I think we've diverged.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a
geopolitical
tangent.
All right, back to...
So what's happening in the future, board?
right.
The fellow board, you mean.
I think the infra will need some work too. I mean, especially lately, there's some rounds of issues.
Yeah, the jacobs.ci.cloudbees has been having problems. I've seen Kostyasha complaining about that.
Bigger than that, I think the big thing that I would say, as a newly appointed board member, I can say we're going to tackle in 2015.
You should have done this ages.
I didn't realize it was that easy. We could have just done. So, from the infrastructure side of things, there's been a number of issues that we've raised in the past month or so that are effectively single points of failure on Kosuke. And
like
previously,
releases?
And
previously,
some of them on you?
And some of them on me. But mostly Kosuke. But previously, those weren't as big of an issue, so we actually didn't bother addressing them. And we also didn't have a lot of the tooling in place to address them.
Mm-hmm.
So only last year, with some help from Puppet Labs, do we actually have a good means of managing secrets across the infrastructure, which was a big impediment to getting some of the release keys and getting some of the special things that Kosuke alone has, in years past, had sole access to.
Right.
So we actually have... Chris, you've been helping with some of this BOP stuff. We've been recording a lot of these things that need to be addressed, and I think I can't say that we're going to get releases, you know, cut from Jenkins or cut from some group of people that are deemed appropriate to cut releases just yet. But I think over 2015, we're definitely going to be reducing the single points of failure on individuals.
Yeah.
Which is a big change. Like, When we talked about the switchover from Hudson to Jenkins, one of the things that was implicit in that is all of the internal infrastructure that Kosuke had sort of scavenged inside of Sun was no longer available to us.
Right.
So that was even before the rename. That was when Kosuke left Oracle.
But we've got that's true. The stuff that was put in place to manage that was very sort of haphazardly thrown together because we needed something that was more than me and Kosuke and other people just like pseudoing to root and making manual changes. Last year we worked with Puppet Labs, who was fortunate enough to donate a lot of professional service time to get us into a place where we can actually accept meaningful contributions in infrastructure, which, you know, that's cool story, bro. We now need to get contributions to reduce some of this dependence on handcrafted shit and single points of failure. So that I know we're going to be moving in that direction in 2015 for sure. The extent of which I think is going to depend on how involved CloudBees as a company gets in helping with infrastructure and how well we're able to sort of distribute the load amongst, I would say, more sysadmin savvy contributors to the Jenkins project. What we haven't been able to do yet is sort of recruit people who are interested in systems administration who aren't already interested in Jenkins. So we're sort of pulling from the existing people who already like Jenkins to contribute time, which is a small group.
Enabling parallelization, I think, is going to be very important. I mean, one of the reasons that the Jenkins itself has managed to create this community is because it has this plugin mechanism that's like inherently a way of parallelizing development without requiring that much coordination. So in infra, that's harder, but I think it's kind of important step.
So are we ever going to have a 2.0?
Do we need Jenkins 2.0 at any point?
Because it's hilarious because we actually have theoretically stuck to semantic versioning, haven't we?
We have.
Because we're backwards compatible.
Kind of. To
you can run really, really ancient plugins.
To like 120 or 130, right?
You can run plugins from before 1200, I know that.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. You can run pretty much any plugin.
So if we have, I think if there are things. So this like a trade-off between compatibility and then being able to evolve more quickly is kind of like an issue. And at the time I do feel like we are bringing too much baggage. Yeah, but the concern that I have in TO is like when we create like a have this like a TO in the vacuum, like it could end up this
Perl 6.
Yes, exactly.
So,
I actually think
what might be a beneficial route to go down to figure out what 2.0 is. Is just define a new plugin interface. Like, I think we have enough learnings across the hundreds of contributors to plugins to know what should be out of, like, we had this problem with source control to some extent and some of the Maven stuff. There's stuff in core that probably shouldn't be in core, but is there because of,
there's very little left. It's always been
in core. And it's been a long process pulling that stuff out of core.
Right.
To where if you did nothing else for Jenkins 2.0 other than define a new plugin interface, I think that would be...
Why?
Because Kosuke and everyone else has learned so much since the beginning.
Well, there's something sort of like a benefit in being able to throw away the old deprecated part of the...
Let me put it this way. Defining plugin UI sucks.
Okay. Mm.
Define me, at the very least, a new way of building plugin UI. Call it 2.0. If for nothing else, just call that the new
As soon
thing.
As you invoke UI, I have no reason to because I loved the views and defining the plugin view stuff because I'm like, oh my god, I don't have to figure all of it out myself. I don't have to write a UI because, I should never write a UI.
Well, it's arguably one of the most griped about problems with Jenkins is not necessarily user interface, but user experience. And we've made minor optimizations over time, but at the end of the day, the way in which JavaScript is loaded on the page and the way in which Jelly views are expressed is still very much rooted in 2006.
I don't see what the problem there is.
Yeah, that's
fair. I don't expect you to.
Back in my day.
If you had to do TO, that would be like one of the primary, isn't it? Like, revisit the way the UI is put together. Yeah.
Also, this would give you a chance to go straight to Java 9.
I don't think it's a
thing. Come on, Jigsaw.
not OSCI, not over my dead body.
Oh, it's not OSCI. It's not OSCI.
That's probably the strongest
statement
I've ever heard Kosuke make.
It's different than OSGI. It's like OSGI, but not compatible. I still don't understand OSGI. Then again, I don't think OSGI understands OSGI.
So the user experience is kind of like another thing we should be doing in the future. And then, I think there are a lot.
Tom Fennelly has done a lot of good work.
Yeah.
But I
at the end of the we had this experience with previous attempts at UI revamps, is there's a wall, and the wall is the way in which UI is composited between a lot of different plugins and what's in core, and how views are really presented, to where, I mean, this is my personal opinion, not a board approved opinion.
Hey, you're on the board, you get to approve
things. But I mean, it's an extremely hard problem to solve. I spent effectively the entire trip back from FOSDEM 2012 thinking of how you would build a pluggable UI in a way that would meet plugin requirements, but also meet the way in which front-end web applications are built today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I actually was able to you know, in 12 hours of thinking about.
Well, especially because that was 3 years ago, so how would you know how web applications are built today?
Yeah,
I mean, there's been a huge amount of changes to where...
Yeah, I was
like,
being slightly sarcastic.
I want guys like Tom to be able to succeed in really improving our user experience, but at the end of the day, really, like, what restricts them goes way deeper than just front end. It comes down to data model, plugin infrastructure, and how things are really propagated up that eventually manifest in the UI.
I just realized that I actually think I have to sign on with this, because it will probably result in cutting down the number of plugins.
The plugin number is too damn high.
Yeah, well, you did. You weren't at the SF conference. You didn't see my dear Mr. Jenkins. There are too many plugins these days. Please eliminate 300. P.S. I am not a crank. The Abe Simpson reference.
Yeah, I think the discoverability of the plugins, I think it would help you a lot.
Plugin curation has been a problem that we've been talking about as long as UI, as user experience improvement, and we have done less with it.
Yeah.
It is hard. We do have too many plugins. 1,000 plugins is too many, given what they're not actually doing 1,000 different things or even close to 1,000 different things. They're doing maybe 300 different things. Really?
Here's a concrete example. Look at the number of plugins that revolve around GitHub integration in some form or another. The fact that those are not centralized in one plugin, I actually do not think is fault.
Not all of them are even related to each other. There's different implementations.
I don't think that is necessarily a fault of plugin developers. The majority, from anecdotally, observation of how things have developed over time, majority of plugins are developed by individuals at companies or individuals within projects who need a specific end. They're usually developing towards a specific end. There's a subset of those, which are, you know, Bobby Sandel, Chris Orr, who have sort of staying power with their plugins.
Yeah.
And then there's things like the daemon monster that is the Git plugin that becomes all things to all people.
But I mean, those problems I actually think are core problems. The fact that it is not something, the number of different publisher plugins, to me that is not a problem that we have too many people who want to publish to different things, is that there's something missing in not necessarily Jenkins core, but I'll refer to it as Jenkins base, that allows them to do what they need to do. Like, there are only so many ways you can archive a fucking document onto a build, but we have a number of different plugins that do that. And so if we were to say, go back to the drawing board and say, here's a thousand plugins, here's a UI problem, what should a plugin interface look like correctly for Jenkins 2.0, I think we would obviate the need for some number of plugins that exist today.
But I think the way I thought of it is that this cost of communication and collaboration is, and if you compare it to the cost of actually coding it up, like sometimes it's just coding it up.
We have to make that worth it though, because the ultimate end user experience is that an end user comes in and sees 5 or 6 different GitHub related plugins and doesn't know what to choose. And so people, and this is why we've talked about curating plugins, we've talked about
creating, you know, here's the Python plugin pack of what you need to work with Python effectively,
yeah.
is because someone coming in fresh is not going to be able to make educated decisions on what is the right subset of that 1,000 plugins to meet their use cases.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so I know I've seen at least 2 or 3 examples where we have redundant plugins because someone genuinely did not know that a thing existed, and it's super easy to build one, so they just built another version of that thing.
Right.
You're actually drastically understating.
I think it's sort of like a creation discovery, that sort of problem.
I think that's, from my perspective, that fixes a symptom, not a root cause.
Okay, to me, that's the problem. Okay. I also wonder why this doesn't get, I mean, in a way, this seems like such an obvious problem to anyone. It's, and there's like plenty of graduate students around wanting to experiment and stuff like that. How come no one has done this? Like, in a way, is this not a big, important enough problem?
There are not very many.
It's not a very interesting.
Extensible plugin architectures that I've seen that have needed to scale to the versatility.
Maven plugin writing is too damn hard. Gradle has its own discovery issues and publishing issues. Grails. Has a lot of plugins. A lot of them are redundant.
Doesn't have
to. And most of it's written by like 2 people.
You can think of it as package management.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is something we've talked about a few times, this curation. And the thing is, we have the data in some form.
Mm-hmm.
The work has to be done. So I don't know whether it's... I don't actually know if we do have this data in an open format of which plugins are used together. We certainly have statistics of... We have statistics of which plugins, how many plugin installations there are, but I don't know if we have in an open format, easily accessible for someone to come along, which plugins are used together. So then
we need our recommendations.
Right.
I see you've installed the Git plugin.
We should build a big data app on top of Cloudera's stack.
If only there was someone here who worked for a big data company.
I don't know anything about it. I know Bill.
So now that you're not on the board and you have all this free time.
You see, that I was spending that with my time as a member of the Apache infrastructure team and root at Apache.
Oh.
Sorry. That's where most of my open source activity is these days.
That's fair.
They roped me in by having me take over Jenkins.
I guess
that's
an acceptable excuse.
It all started with fixing Jenkins there because Olivier left it in a weird state.
All right, so just for the record, we do have that data. We have information about which version of which plugin that installed by who, and then like so on and so forth.
Okay.
So, yeah. So
we need to MapReduce and build...
Or Spark, or... Oh, God, my brain hurts. All right, it's time to wrap up.
Okay, so so let's see what's the last note here.
So why do we do this again?
Yeah, so when is the...
What's our next milestone? We've got 100,000...
10 years.
Public users, or publicly reporting users.
Mm-hmm.
We've got over 1,000 plugins. We've got other large numbers of other things. We've hit a lot of milestones.
Yeah, it's kind of like nicely old.
Yeah, we're big. We're grown up. thanks, Cluster.
Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone for using it, really. I mean, if you think that every 100,000 is somebody installing it and running it, it's like a mind blowing.
Just think about that. Really, your average Jenkins installation probably has more than 10 people using it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least 1 million people. Using software that we've all contributed to.
That's insane.
That is pretty terrifying. please don't run my code.
All right. So I don't know if there's a use. I think earliest, before starting this title, so we, at the end of this, we need to be all facing sunset in the beach. I think you should recommend picturing us doing that.
Looking up at the sky.
I want to get the tombstone style where I'm walking with our dusters and our six shooters kind of thing. But I guess I'm a little bit more confrontational.
Maybe next time we can plan on this thing. If you're going to be part of a bigger meetup, that might be more interesting to more people.
Yeah. Do it on stage.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's probably good enough.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool, cool.
Okay.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah, I did let that go 20 minutes long, you know, 20, 25 minutes longer, but it.